Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we explore A Little History of Economics by Niall Kishtany. This book presents a concise journey through the evolution of economic thought, from the ancient philosophies of Aristotle to the contemporary insights of Thomas Piketty. It addresses perennial economic questions about inequality, individual motives, and the extent of government intervention in the marketplace. Author Niall Kishtany, a seasoned professor affiliated with both the London School of Economics and the University of Warwick, uses his expertise to distill complex economic theories into accessible ideas. He argues that understanding the history of economic thought is crucial for making sense of today's global economy and steering it toward a better future. This book is perfect for the econo-curious individual, those seeking a broad overview of the field of economics, or students engaged in comprehensive history studies. Join us as we summarize the key insights and takeaways from this insightful exploration of economic history. A Little History of Economics, a whistle-stop tour of the major questions posed by economists through the centuries, from Aristotle to Thomas Piketty. Introduction. Explore the twists and turns of economic history. Economics might seem straightforward with its focus on supply and demand, but it's actually a complex tale of how societies manage resources. Originating from the Greek words oikos, house, and nomos, law, economics was initially conceived as household management, but its scope has vastly expanded to question and explain the variances among societies. Ever wondered why structural and educational disparities exist between countries like Britain and Burkina Faso? Economics doesn't just pose these questions. It delves into potential reasons behind such global discrepancies. No certain answers exist, yet the pursuit of these answers forms the crux of economic theory and practice. This narrative will guide you through the annals of economic history, from its inception in ancient Greece to the modern-day ramifications seen in the 2007 global financial crisis caused by risky banking activities. By reflecting on past economic theories and their applications, we gain clarity on our current conditions and possibly future directions. Throughout this exploration, you'll uncover intriguing transformations, such as why the Catholic Church eventually endorsed moneylending, a practice it formally denounced. You'll also examine how changes in the relationship between the Soviet government and its economy had tragic consequences, leading to the death of millions. Additionally, learn about the inherent biases that might influence economists' perspectives. By understanding the past movements and milestones in economics, we can better navigate our present and influence our collective future. Part 1. Tracing the roots of economic thought, money, and the morality of markets. Turning the pages back to ancient Greece, we meet Aristotle, often regarded as the first economist. His musings around the 4th century BCE laid foundational ideas regarding money's role in society. Money, for Aristotle, was a tool to facilitate exchange and assign value to goods, which is quite beneficial. However, he was wary of its darker potential. Let's consider an olive farmer who, realizing he can profit from his produce, begins to mass produce olives. Aristotle saw this shift, from growing what one needs to growing for profit, as a dangerous tilt towards greed, dubbing such profit-oriented activities as commerce, which he deemed unnatural. He was especially critical of moneylending, or what we now refer to as charging interest, believing it exploited the need of others to make more money. Despite Aristotle's reservations, commerce and moneylending didn't wane but continued to flourish, signaling the beginning of an economic evolution. Fast forward to the 13th century, and you find similar contempt for moneylending among early Christian scholars like St. Thomas Aquinas. He vilified the practice he called usury, arguing that money's only virtuous use was for straightforward buying and selling. Yet, the burgeoning trade practices in Venice and Genoa were making money lending increasingly indispensable. The era saw the rise of the first banks, where merchants could securely store wealth and settle debts, easing trading practices across Europe and beyond. This shift enticed peasants to leave the feudal farmlands and seek monetary employment in cities, marking a significant socio-economic shift. Even the Catholic Church, which had long opposed usury, began to adapt to the changing economic landscape. By the 12th century, the Pope canonized Homobonus, an Italian merchant, recognizing his contributions as a godly pursuit rather than a sinful one. This transformation kept pace as European explorers commandeered foreign lands, plundering resources like silver and gold, thereby enriching their home countries. This extraction and exploitation ushered in the age of mercantilism, comprising a powerful alliance between merchants and European rulers, dramatically altering the economic and political landscape of the time. In England, thinkers like Thomas Munn pondered over strategies to boost national wealth, emphasizing that the prosperity of merchants would contribute to the nation's affluence. This led to the creation of joint stock companies, like the East India Company, which pooled collective investments and shared profits among its stakeholders. This historical journey from medieval economic practices, governed by religion and personal relationships, to a more structured, mercantile, and eventually industrial economy, highlights the profound transformation money and commerce have imposed on human societies. Aristotle's ancient contemplations on commerce set the stage for a deep, enduring conversation about the morality and impact of economic practices that continues to resonate today. Part 2. Revolutionary economics emerges with the Industrial Revolution. As the embers of the industrial age started to flicker, a group of pioneering economists emerged, poised to redefine our understanding of wealth and its creation. In the salons and academic halls of pre-revolutionary France, François Quesnay led a cadre of thinkers who challenged the prevailing economic doctrines. Quesnay, though a staunch monarchist, proposed a groundbreaking idea: cease taxing the hard-working peasants, and instead impose taxes on the affluent aristocracy. He argued that peasants, who harness nature's bounty, a gift from God, according to him, were the real contributors to national prosperity. France's strategy to burden these peasants with taxes, he opined, was deeply flawed. Compounding this misstep, Quesnay criticized the state's policies that favored merchants by granting them exclusive privileges and enabling them to form protective guilds. This stifled competition and innovation, contrary to the principles of laissez-faire economics, a concept advocating minimal governmental interference in economic activities. Quesnay's ideas marked the beginning of a long-standing debate over the role of government in economics, a conversation that persists fervently today. Across the Channel in Scotland, another intellectual giant, Adam Smith, was setting quill to paper on what would become a seminal work in economic theory. In 1776, his book, The Wealth of Nations, introduced ideas that would fundamentally reshape economic thought. Smith argued that individuals acting in their own self-interest, paradoxically, contribute positively to societal well-being. This phenomenon seemed to be regulated by an unseen force, which he famously termed the invisible hand. The transformations brought about by England's burgeoning industrial age served as a real-time laboratory for Smith's theories. As the nation transitioned from an agrarian economy to one dominated by industry, sprawling factories became the new economic nuclei. Within these industrial behemoths, the specialization of labor became a necessity. Smith illustrated this with the division of labor principle, explaining how intricate economies encouraged individuals to specialize. While one person might excel at baking bread, another found their skill in crafting furniture. This specialization led to even more granular divisions within trades. In a furniture workshop, for example, One might specialize in nailing, while another focused on sanding. This enhanced productivity and drove down the cost of goods, benefiting society by making products more affordable. However, this evolution was not without its drawbacks. Specialized tasks often became monotonous, stripping work of its craftsmanship and joy. While a worker might spend all day performing a single repetitive task, the owners of these enterprises reaped substantial economic rewards from increased production efficiency. This era of economic thought and industrial change not only transformed how goods were produced, but also began to subtly rewrite the social contracts and economic structures of societies, laying the foundations for the modern economic landscapes we navigate today. Part 3: Addressing the Wealth Gap, Economic Insights from the 19th Century. As England reveled in its industrial boom, the stark divide between the wealthy landowners and capitalists and the struggling working class deepened dramatically. This glaring disparity prompted 19th century economists to delve into the nuances of wealth inequality and propose varied solutions. David Ricardo, a British stockbroker turned economic theorist, championed the cause of free trade as a potential remedy for inequality. At the time, Britain enforced laws against importing cheaper foreign grain, maintaining high domestic grain prices that disproportionately benefited wealthy landowners at the expense of the working population. Ricardo advocated for the repeal of these protectionist laws, arguing that allowing the import of inexpensive grain would alleviate some of the economic pressures on workers and help level the societal playing field. Although initially dismissed and ridiculed by Parliament for his views, Ricardo's principles gained traction and vindication years after his death, when the laws he opposed were eventually repealed. This era was ripe with diverse perspectives on the intensifying wealth gap. Some economists, like Thomas Malthus, attributed poverty to personal failings such as laziness, arguing against welfare or support on the basis that it would only encourage indolence. Malthus believed that without external assistance, individuals would be compelled to improve their circumstances through their own efforts. Conversely, the burgeoning socialist ideology presented a more collective vision of society. Thinkers like Charles Fourier and Robert Owen advocated for communal ownership and cooperative living as the bedrock of a harmonious society, starkly contrasting with the competitive, market-driven model. However, the most profound and influential analysis of capitalist society's inequalities came from Karl Marx, whose seminal work, Das Kapital, critiqued the very foundations of capitalism. Marx argued that capitalism inherently exploits workers, who, owning only their labor, are subject to the whims of capitalists, the owners of production means. He predicted that these systemic tensions would eventually lead to a communist society where class distinctions are obliterated. Despite Marx's detailed critique of capitalism, he offered scant elaboration on the workings of the anticipated communist society, leading to various interpretations and significant misapplications of his theories in the following epochs. Recognizing the dire circumstances of the working class, early 20th century European governments began to implement reforms aimed at improving worker conditions. These included the introduction of unemployment benefits, the provision of universal education, and the abolition of child labor, laying the groundwork for the more active role that governments would come to play in economic matters throughout the 20th century. From free trade advocacy to socialist ideals and the critical scrutiny by Marx, the 19th century was a pivotal period in economic thought, shaping the discourse around wealth, equality, and the role of government in balancing these intricate dynamics. Part 4: Exploring Government's Role in Economics as America Flourishes. At the dawn of the 20th century, Europe was entrenched in fierce debates about the ideal relationship between government and economy, while simultaneously, America's immense wealth was coming sharply into focus. The period saw the practical application of Karl Marx's theories by Vladimir Lenin, who led the 1917 revolution that dismantled Tsarist Russia and birthed the Soviet Union, the world's inaugural communist state. Lenin viewed this new state as a bastion against imperialism, which he and other thinkers critiqued as a mechanism that artificially prolonged capitalism's viability. The Soviet Union embarked on an experiment with central planning, where the government, not market demands, dictated economic outputs. An example of this could be the decision that all cars should be painted blue, a choice driven by government decree rather than consumer preference. This approach starkly contrasted with the economic principles in vogue across much of the Western world, particularly in the burgeoning economic powerhouse, the United States. The human cost of the Soviet experiment became tragically apparent during the 1930s, when a devastating famine claimed approximately 30 million lives. Despite such calamities, the notion that governments should play a role in managing economies gained traction. Economist Arthur Pigou argued that individual and corporate actions, while self-beneficial, could inadvertently produce detrimental societal effects. He believed government intervention was crucial to mitigate these negative impacts. Conversely, Ludwig von Mises staunchly opposed extensive government involvement in the economy. He reasoned that government-set prices detached from market realities rendered economic calculations meaningless and upheld capitalism as the only logical economic system where money and profit drive efficient market operations. Across the ocean, America's new class of wealthy industrialists like the Vanderbilts and Carnegies flaunted their prosperity through extravagant lifestyles. Economist Thorstein Veblen coined the term conspicuous consumption to describe their lavish spending meant to publicly display their wealth and social status. Veblen argued that this ostentatious behavior was not only a display of wealth, but also influenced the lower classes, nudging them towards a cycle of continuous consumption to maintain social appearances. Veblen warned that this unsustainable cycle of consumption was leading society towards an inevitable economic downturn. His observations highlighted the stark differences in economic models and societal effects between America's capitalist excess and the Soviets' rigid central planning, contributing to an ongoing global dialogue about the optimal role of government in economic affairs. As America continued to display its opulence, the dialogue surrounding economic governance and its societal impacts only deepened, setting the stage for further philosophical and practical explorations in the years to come. Part 5. New economic theories emerge from crisis and conflict. The Great Depression of 1929 served as a stark reminder of the vulnerabilities in the world's richest nation, prompting a re-evaluation of the role of governments in economies. As fortunes dwindled and unemployment skyrocketed to affect a quarter of the American workforce, economists grappled with the profound crisis. British economist John Maynard Keynes became a pivotal figure during this period, proposing that the severity of the Great Depression was largely due to inadequate governmental response to the initial recession signs. Keynes observed that the natural instinct of individuals and businesses to curtail spending in times of economic uncertainty only exacerbated the downturn. His conviction was that the economy wouldn't self-correct without significant government intervention to stimulate spending. The overarching theme of the mid-20th century was the intense debate over the extent of government involvement in the economy. While the Soviet Union's extreme approach resulted in tragic consequences, such as famine, other voices warned of different risks associated with government control. Austrian-born economist Friedrich Hayek, during World War II, raised alarms about the loss of individual freedoms under extensive government economic management. He controversially compared the economic controls in Nazi Germany with those in wartime Britain, suggesting that even well-intentioned government intervention could slide towards totalitarianism. Post-war, the dialogue expanded globally, especially in regions shaking off the yoke of colonization. Ghana, which gained independence in 1957, adopted a model of strong government control, advised by economist Arthur Lewis. The goal was a substantial economic push to elevate Ghana's status on the global economic stage, comparable to that of America and Europe. However, the results were mixed across different nations. While African and Latin American countries struggled with government-led economic models due to the intertwining of politics and economic development, some East Asian countries saw remarkable successes. South Korea is a prominent example, where government alignment with the economy proved extraordinarily fruitful. In the aftermath of the war, state-controlled initiatives spurred the growth of now globally recognized corporations like Hyundai and Samsung. This period marked a significant evolution in economic thought. Influenced by political events and the varying success of government interventions across the globe, these developments contributed to a richer, more diverse understanding of the complex relationship between government actions and economic outcomes. Part 6: New Frontiers in Economics, From Micro Decisions to Global Challenges. Post World War II marked a dynamic shift in economic thought, catalyzed by changes in global structures and the emergence of new economic challenges. While John Maynard Keynes had significantly shaped modern macroeconomics, advocating for substantial government intervention in economies, the period also saw the rise of microeconomics, the study of individual and business decision-making processes and their impact on the economy's resource distribution. Amid the tension of the Cold War, the interdependencies and potential consequences of political decisions on global economic landscapes became starkly evident. This period saw the development of game theory by a team of American economists and mathematicians. Originally designed to aid military and political strategies by anticipating and countering opponents' moves, game theory found profound applications in economics, helping understand competitive behaviors not only between countries, but also among businesses and individuals, as economists ventured into exploring diverse applications of economic theory. Gary Becker introduced groundbreaking perspectives by applying economic analysis to social issues like crime. He postulated that criminal activities could be viewed through the lens of cost-benefit analysis. Criminals weigh the potential benefits of their actions against the risks, such as incarceration. Based on this theory, Becker argued that the most effective way to deter crime was to enhance the consequences, thereby tipping the cost-benefit scale against criminal activities. However, the persistent problem of global inequality continued to provoke intense debate and analysis. The mid-20th century saw revolutionary figures like Che Guevara and Fidel Castro attributing Latin America's poverty to capitalist exploitation by wealthier nations, particularly the United States. They, along with German economist André Franck, suggested that international trade systems were structured to disadvantage less wealthy nations, widening the economic gap between countries. This ideology underpinned the socialist revolts and the establishment of communist governments that aimed to overthrow the capitalist framework, which they believed perpetuated global poverty. Despite these vehement arguments against capitalism, evidence from Asian nations like South Korea presented a counter-narrative. As these countries experienced rapid economic development and significant advancements under capitalist systems without undergoing socialist revolutions, they provided practical examples that challenged the notion that capitalism inherently hindered the progress of less developed nations. This era in economic thought not only expanded the purview of economic analysis to encompass both minute everyday decisions and massive global issues, but also highlighted the diverse methodologies and ideologies that could coexist within the field. As economists tackled these varying scales of economic phenomena, they continuously pushed the boundaries of economic theory and its applications across the globe. Part 7: The Fluctuating Fortunes of Keynesian Economics Post-World War II. After World War II, the economic theories of John Maynard Keynes, which advocated for significant government intervention to regulate national economies, were put into robust practice. This period saw the rise of the Young Keynesians, a faction of economists who formulated practical applications of Keynesian principles, gaining considerable traction through the 1960s. A landmark instance of these theories materializing into public policy was under President Kennedy, who implemented Keynesian-inspired tax cuts aimed at revitalizing the economy by boosting consumer spending. Initially, this approach appeared efficacious, garnering bipartisan support in the United States, even among those traditionally wary of expansive government roles in economic matters. However, as the 1970s dawned, the enthusiasm began to wane. Economists and policymakers started questioning the long-term viability of Keynesian policies, particularly concerning their role in triggering inflation and whether they genuinely contributed to the robust economic performance of the 1960s. During the late 1970s, a climate of economic discontent enveloped Britain, marked by widespread strikes and protests against unemployment and rising inflation, issues many attributed to the Keynesian model of economic management. This skepticism was epitomized by economist Milton Friedman, who critiqued the temporary nature of improvements brought about by increased government spending, which he argued led invariably back to high unemployment rates and inflated the money supply, exacerbating inflation. Friedman championed a market-led approach to economic governance, advocating for what would later be known as supply-side economics. He argued that instead of boosting consumer demand through fiscal stimulus, a Keynesian approach, governments should focus on fostering favorable conditions for businesses to increase production and supply. His ideas profoundly influenced the economic policies of leaders like Margaret Thatcher in the UK and Ronald Reagan in the US, though these policies also faced criticism for possibly deepening the economic crises of the 1970s rather than ameliorating them. Moreover, the debate extended beyond the efficacy of Keynesian versus supply-side economics to question the fundamental trustworthiness of government involvement in economic policy. American economist James Buchanan offered a critical perspective, suggesting that governments, like individuals, are driven by self-interest. Politicians, he posited, might pursue popular spending policies more to garner electoral support than to genuinely foster economic well-being, raising concerns about the motivations behind government economic interventions. Thus, the post-war era was marked by intense debates and shifting opinions regarding the role of government in managing economies, with Keynesian economics experiencing both significant adoption and profound skepticism, reflecting the evolving challenges and priorities of global economic policy. Part 8. The High Cost of High Stakes, Financial Risks and Their Repercussions. As the 20th century drew to a close, the financial world witnessed a seismic shift in the persona and practices of bankers. Gone were the days of the conservative, tweed-suited financiers. The 1980s heralded the arrival of a new archetype in the banking sector: the brash, risk-loving, cowboy bankers. These individuals reshaped the industry with their bold speculation on commodities like wheat and oil, basing huge purchases on forecasts of future prices. Their gambles, when successful, yielded substantial profits. Among these risk-takers was currency speculator George Soros, who famously made a staggering profit of £1 billion in 1992, an event that notably shook the Bank of England and highlighted the profound impact of speculative finance. This era of high-risk financial behavior wasn't just limited to professional environments, but trickled down to amateur stock traders too. Seduced by the potential for tremendous gains, this speculative spirit was particularly evident during the 1990s tech boom. The public's frenzied rush to invest in nascent tech companies led to wildly inflated stock prices, driven more by emotional frenzy than reasoned evaluation of the company's actual value. The resultant tech bubble eventually burst, erasing $2 trillion in value, devastating individual fortunes, and toppling companies. Yet, this cycle of boom and bust did not end with the tech crisis. Soon, a similar bubble formed around the US housing market, which also spectacularly burst in 2007, precipitating a global economic meltdown. Economist Hyman Minsky provided a framework for understanding these phenomena. He theorized that capitalism inherently breeds financial instability over time as entities engage in increasingly reckless borrowing and lending to maximize profits. This cycle escalates until banks extend credit to debtors with minimal repayment capacity under the assumption that asset prices will continue to rise indefinitely. When these financially overstretched borrowers fail to meet their debt obligations, asset prices collapse, leading to a full-blown financial and economic crisis. The 2007 collapse prompted a reevaluation of economic strategies worldwide. In response, global powerhouses like the United States and China pivoted back towards Keynesian economics, ramping up government spending in an effort to stimulate recovery, an approach that remains influential in policy discussions today. This period vividly illustrated the perils of unchecked financial speculation and reaffirmed the need for robust economic frameworks to mitigate such risks in the future. Part 9. Tackling the complex challenge of inequality in modern economic thought. In the realm of contemporary economics, perhaps no issue resonates as deeply and persistently as inequality. Indian economist Amartya Sen, profoundly affected by the sectarian violence he witnessed in his youth, devoted his career to exploring the underlying causes of inequality. Sen's perspective on poverty extends beyond mere material shortages. He posits that true poverty stems from a deficiency in capabilities, the essential tools and opportunities, such as access to transportation or education, that allow individuals to improve their socio-economic positions. Sen's contributions were pivotal in the development of the Human Development Index by the United Nations, a tool that evaluates nations not just by income, but by life expectancy, literacy, and other significant quality of life indicators. His work underscores the conviction that economic development should focus on broadening human capabilities to enhance overall well-being, rather than solely on increasing financial outputs. A critical aspect of Sen's work also includes the examination of gender inequalities. He highlighted the inherent biases in economic studies, primarily steered by men from homogeneous backgrounds, which often overlook the nuanced experiences and contributions of women. In the 1990s, feminist economists took up this mantle further by challenging traditional economic narratives that frequently ignored women's unpaid labor, such as domestic chores, caregiving, and subsistence farming. This labor, crucial yet undervalued economically, places women at a distinct disadvantage regarding resource allocation, including wages, food, and healthcare. Feminist economists argue that without targeted policies to address these gender disparities, the condition is likely to worsen, advocating for social change and informed policymaking as tools for redress. However, the broader picture of global inequality encapsulates more than just gender or poverty. It includes the stark wealth accumulation at the top echelons of society. French economist Thomas Piketty offered insights into this phenomenon, suggesting that capitalism intrinsically enables those already wealthy to generate more wealth passively. To counteract this cycle, some economists recommend strategies such as implementing higher minimum wages and imposing increased taxes on wealth. Despite these proposals, the political will to enact such redistributive measures has waned since the 1970s, with many governments reducing taxes on the wealthy due to their considerable influence and power. These ongoing economic disparities prompt a crucial discourse on the future of economic policy and equality. Today's economists and future generations are tasked with conceiving innovative solutions to navigate and possibly overcome these entrenched inequalities, ensuring a more balanced and equitable global economy. Final summary. Economics, often perceived as a complex and distant field, is fundamentally about addressing the tangible challenges that affect everyday lives. This discipline extends beyond the abstract manipulation of numbers and theories. It serves as a critical lens through which we can examine the disparities and interactions among individuals, communities, classes, and nations. At its core, economics explores the use of money, not just as a medium of exchange for labor and necessities, but also as an instrument in understanding and bridging the gap between different economic strata. The ultimate goal of economic inquiry and policy making is to mitigate inequality, ensuring a fairer distribution of resources and opportunities across the societal spectrum. By delving into economic principles, one gains insight into the mechanisms that underpin wealth distribution, market fluctuations, and fiscal policies, all of which have direct implications on the quality of life and the potential for human development. Thus, economics emerges not just as a theoretical study, but as a vital tool in crafting solutions to enhance collective welfare and progress. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.